This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Even though stores might be crowded today, you might see fewer people hanging around. For Marketplace in Los Angeles, I'm Andy Euler in for David Brancaccio. As you hit the shops for the holidays, don't be surprised if you see more touchscreen kiosks and robots to help you find stuff, set up home delivery, or check out at the register. Retailers like Walmart, Lowe's, and even fast food chains like McDonald's say they want to save consumers time and trouble. But they're also saving money on labor. From the Marketplace Bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
As consumers shop more online, they go buy stuff at stores less. Meanwhile, wages in retail are rising. In response, says David Schick at Consumer Edge Research,
the retailers are investing in technology, but perhaps fewer employees.
They're experimenting with automated kiosks that let you order food or ask about a sweater size, which means less work for human order takers and customer service reps, right?
I don't think there's any more reason to fear kiosks in fast food restaurants than we would fear bulldozers and cranes on construction sites.
Lawrence Michel at the Economic Policy Institute says rarely has automation led to a net decline in jobs. More likely, new technology will boost productivity and employment in the long run. David Schick predicts fewer in-store jobs, but sees new ones cropping up in virtual reality commerce.
Put the headset on and you could virtually walk into a store and interact with a real person or talk to something that's digital, more of a bot.
The robot version, of course, doesn't draw a paycheck. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The turkey you ate yesterday was produced domestically, but what about the tuna sashimi you might eat tonight? In the U.S., we import about 90% of the seafood we eat, and about half of that comes from fish farms or aquaculture. Some regulators want to allow fish farming in federal waters, which begin 3 miles off the state's shorelines. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has more.
Wild fish stocks can't keep up with rising demand for seafood. That's prompting a big increase in fish farms or aquaculture. Michael Rubino is with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA.
Here in the United States, I think a lot of people have been telling us that they'd like to see more seafood farmed here in the U.S. rather than importing it. So seafood that comes under our stringent environmental laws.
Farmed fish create pollution with their waste, but in federal waters, the open ocean, the waste can be diffused more easily than near coastlines. That's according to Aaron McNevin, an aquaculture expert with the World Wildlife Fund.
The potential, if the locations are chosen correctly, is to have relatively less nutrient pollution impacts than in nearshore environments.
NOAA has finalized rules for aquaculture in the federal waters of the Gulf of Mexico. Now it's studying the potential for farms in federal waters off Pacific islands like Hawaii. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
We've got a whole new season of Codebreaker where radio journalism meets the Twilight Zone. This season we got one question in mind: can it save us? Subscribe right now on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.
Okay, when you decide to go into a coffee shop, you might go in, buy a coffee, sit down with your laptop, and try to get some work done. Or stop me if I'm wrong, but you might find that there aren't any plugs, no Wi-Fi, the music's too loud. Seems like coffee shops are telling us it's not really cool to buy one coffee and stay there all day long. Cafe in New York found a way to around this awkward dance. Customers pay by the minute rather than the cup. Marketplace's Marielle Segura has that one.
The Glass Hour Cafe in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, feels more like somebody's living room than a coffee shop. Walking around, you see a couch, some beanbag chairs.
We have foosball table, we have PlayStation 4, we have a variety of board games.
What you won't see at Glass Hour, a kitchen, or even a cappuccino machine. You serve yourself from a simple drip coffee pot. The food? A few humble granola bars and chocolates.
We don't want this place to be like a food place. It's not a food place. It's not a coffee shop.
So what is Glass Hour exactly? The owners, who opened it in August, call it an anti-cafe. Instead of shelling out for food and drink, customers pay for the time they spend, 10 cents a minute or $6 an hour, which means
no one will judge you for sitting here all day long.
That's a relief for Alexander Atkinson. He's a freelance illustrator who lives in Brooklyn.
A lot of the time I'm a nomad and looking for places to work.
Atkinson says he spends about as much money at Glass Hour as he would at a coffee shop, but feels less guilty.
There's like a peace of mind because there's like a tacit agreement. Like, this is the business model. You're supposed to come here and work.
Pay-as-you-go cafes are new to the U.S., but there are dozens in Europe, mostly in Russia. Ben Davies is the head of marketing at the U.K. and Ireland branch of a European pay-as-you-go chain called Zifferblatt. He says coffee has become a middleman for no good reason.
Half the time when you go to a coffee shop, you're going in there so you can sit down somewhere warm and have a chat with your mate.
Glass Hour's Zlata Koshlina and her co-founders are Russian immigrants and got the idea for their cafe from a Zifferblatt cafe in Moscow.
I think it's a smart idea to bring something if you see that there is no such place, such thing in your current country and, you know, it was back home. Why not to try it here?
Glass Hour isn't profitable yet, so the founders are still waiting to see if there's a market in America and Brooklyn, land of coffee shops, for their imported idea. In New York, I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
All right, so if you're worried about not having any credit history, you might be able to rest easy. Banks are now gauging customers' creditworthiness by using phone company data on calling patterns and locations. Apparently, the more economically active you are, the more people want to call you. Lenders are all over it because it would help them reach about 2 billion people who don't have bank accounts. But as you might assume, there are concerns about these companies using your data. In most cases, you have to grant permission for companies to access your phone records, but it could also be an easy way for folks without bank accounts to gain credit access. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Nguyen. Daniel Shin produces this show. Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. Ben Tolliday is our engineer this week. I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.